agents, your briefing is coming to you directly from the organization, your target, campaign comrades. They're putting out propaganda on the timeline. You must take them out. Make it public. Make it brutal. We are here talking about the Hitman movie, folks. We are shaving our heads bald. We're getting barcode tattoos. Except in today's day and age, they'd be QR codes.
QR codes, yeah.
And it would guaranteed come with some form of malware attached to it.
It would tell you to download some
arbitration clause.
It would like tell you to download some sort of like, you know, crypto, like some sort of like, you know, weird crypto coin. That's how you're going to get your contracts fulfilled.
Actually, no, your camera barely reads it correctly, and it's a drink menu for a random restaurant.
In like Austin, Texas.
As someone who worked on fucking QR codes for a company at one point in time, I never ever want to do that shit ever again. Getting fucking printer PPI correct to get the fucking things to read with a shit camera because you have to make it readable PPI by the worst camera possible.
I should specify that we're doing the original 2007 Hitman.
No, we're doing
movie.
Hitman Agent 47. That's the one that I watched.
Did you watch it?
No.
You said
I was
you
going
thought,
to, and
you
then
said
I played
you
Final
might,
Fantasy
yeah.
instead.
Yeah, that's the smart decision. I've like seen parts of Agent 47 similarly on TV. Like when we were planning this episode out, we're like, you know, as usual, I pull up the list of video game adaptations, and I'm always surprised that the list is not that long. I think there's like around 50 movies, and
I mean,
some of them, in my opinion, are
stretches.
There was
a good point in time where a video game movie was like a death sentence.
No, it still is. Let's be honest. Like, you know, we do live in a post-Mario movie world where a video game movie can make $1 billion, but like, that's like, you know, the exception kind of thing.
Yeah, just wait
still
for the sequel
in
2026.
And yeah, wait till we get, yeah, the Smash Brothers connected universe. But like when we were looking at this list, I'm like scrolling through things and like, you know, let's do Hitman. You know, it is part of like what is on the podcast here, like our favorite genre of film, which is FX movie.
FX I feel like movie we need kind of to make a jingle. That's like campaign comrades. We got the movies. FX. We got the movies. Because that's all.
The definition of an FX movie, for anyone wanting to know, is a movie where the plot can be summed up so quickly that you can be in and out and not necessarily needing to like get like huge plot points. Like
you can
describe the plot of this
movie
in one sentence.
Yeah, you can drop in at any time. Like.
Yeah,
and it's short enough that with commercials, it's not going to be like
it's an hour and a half runtime, so it's going to be a 2 hour with
2 hour block.
Yeah. Boom! Yeah, perfect size.
That's solid, but like, it's the perfect mix of, you know, violence, sex, and some kind of comedy.
Oh, the
elements
sex scene
at time.
Definitely on FX doesn't even get played. They have a cut where they just go right past that.
I mean, it's all implied at that point, yeah.
Yeah.
There is no sex scene.
The almost sex scene, yes.
Okay,
the
almost sex scene,
yeah. Whatever.
But I like that you
I mean,
say
that,
an
all,
element
all of that
comedy.
Still wouldn't be allowed on TV on FX.
I don't know. It's on Hulu now.
No, she's got her titties out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I like that you say an element of comedy, because that's a perfect way to describe it. Because it's not necessarily that the movie is trying to be a comedy in any way. It's just that they, you know, there's some element of the movie in how it was made, whether it's the delivery of the characters' lines, just the bad plot that just makes it.
No,
absolutely
it's because
hilarious.
The main character's the actor is Timothy Oliphant.
Yeah.
Well, anyone whose last name is an Middle Earth for Elephant.
Speaking of the almost sex scene, though. Like we're jumping right into it. I'm asking the important questions. Is Agent 47 a virgin? Has he had sex before? Has he nutted?
He's a virgin.
No, he's a virgin. He's a virgin. He doesn't like talking to women. It's made clear from like the second scene.
He's essentially asexual, but he gets
He gets a little turnt for yeah. our femme fatale well, here.
But it took him a little too long. And if it were me and I saw a girl like that with a tattoo on her face that may be able to kill me if she wanted to, I guess, or like has some violence associated with her, would have fallen way quicker.
For future evidence purposes, if Mike ever ends up tied to a bed and robbed, this is the evidence you can use mm-hmm. to start looking for.
Yeah, no, you can't hold it against the perpetrator at that point. You know, it was consensual. It was consensual robbery at that point.
I would argue though that the display of emotion from Agent 47 is. There is a little bit of a sexual energy to it, but it's closer to a guardian figure, I think. Like, it's more his appreciation. You could consider it
more maybe like, instead of asexual, aromantic.
Seeing himself within her, in that they're both victims of being of human trafficking.
Within her, and then without her, and then within her, and then without and her.
Within him, so, in the name of the
Holy Spirit. So, like, I think it's more about his, like, it's not a sexual connection still, even at that point.
No.
Like, it's more him respecting her as a fellow human. I mean,
he had the same base take as Austin Powers, the, no, baby, you're drunk. It's not right.
So then he roofies her.
Incapacitates her.
Yes. Then he just straight up just injection right into the tissue in the neck. Just boom.
That knocks her out instantly.
So the high grade we're hitting all.
Ready for a horse.
It's probably tuned for like a 6'5" like Russian henchman.
Yeah, like dosage. Gave it to a 5'2", 90-pound femme fatale.
So, one thing that they make a change with when they eventually reboot it with Agent 47, that iteration of the character definitely is emotionless in a way that Timothy Olyphant's rendition of it is not. He definitely has more.
He's breaking out of his training.
Yeah, he definitely strains against the conditioning that, like, in my opinion, makes it better and more enjoyable to watch. Whereas, you know, it might be character development. Yeah, it might be truer to the character in terms of the games that we get, where Agent 47 really is just a cipher for, you know, the player. You know, it is just a blank slate that you can insert yourself into that, like, is good for gameplay and something where you're trying to immerse yourself for extended periods of time, but like to relate to somebody on screen for the short period of time, yeah, you need a little bit more of that.
I just gotta be
humanizing
honest,
though, factor.
And from a world intelligence perspective, from all of them, blaming all of them for this, how does a dude with no hair and a fucking barcode tattooed on his head walking around in a suit always looking like a fucking assassin never get noticed, stopped, watched once?
Yeah,
and is skinheads. Hot. And he's a hot guy. Like it's not like he's like he's not generic. There's nothing that about him that would allow him to blend in.
He's a ghost. It's like, no, he's relatively generic. Not a ghost. He doesn't blend in at all. He stands out like a sore thumb.
He literally is a thumb. He
looks like a thumb.
Yeah.
I've always felt that way about the barcode tattoo. It's like, yeah, the way to be inconspicuous, buddy.
Yeah, you
know, literally having your identification number tattooed on the back of your head.
I will say he was in Williamsburg, he might find some, you know, barcode tattoos amongst himself.
You see, what he should have done instead of a tattoo is they should meticulously shave the hair to the barcode
and make it like always that length. The perfect length.
Maintain
or just rat tails. No. It just is rat tails. Individual little rat tails.
Ben, you bring up something that I think when you're talking to the emotionless version of Agent 47, I don't think any of us played any of the original ones.
I've never played Hitman.
I've played a bit of Hitman 3. the most recent one.
Yeah, so same for me. And so I did a little background just reading the plots of the first two, because the third one kind of came out at the same time just like this movie as this movie. But like it does the second one in particular does have Agent 47 like trying to retire, and like he goes to some like Italian farm essentially, and gets tied up with some mafia shindigs in the second one. So there is, at least with the original character, some more straying from the organization, whereas Hitman 3 I think is closer to that Agent 47 version of
just I feel like there is no story in those, that they're
are
just mission based sandboxes, right?
And I love the homage to that with the little laptop and the shitty 3D spinning graphic that was vintage early 2000s. This is high tech spy like network.
I want to talk about how this is so obviously a like a Bush era film. This is so pre-Obungler. You know, this is mm-hmm. it comes out in 2007. But is, you know, so filmed, you know, in,
well, yeah, but comes out in
2006. So you know, it's before the Obungler has come onto the scene, and like that, this is like, for as it's something interesting to be said that during reactionary points in our kind of social reality and particularly our politics, we get, in my opinion, some better movies. In a lot of that sense, it's you, at least in it from an entertaining point of view, it's funny to point and laugh at the reactionary movies as they, you know, like the, this is an interestingly enough a movie that could have come out, you know, when it did, or you know, 2016, in that it's like it's, you know, a serious anti-Russia.
The entire plot can be summed up as the following. Assassin gets set up killing Russian president double.
But like, this is, again, when you get into the Obungler era, that you lose, like, Hollywood becomes completely sexless, right? You know, you wouldn't have had any of that.
No swag, no riz.
Yeah, no swag. The driest films of all time.
Hey man, where the most recent pollings show that the younger audiences no longer want sex in their movies. They want them to be sexless.
Yeah, there's no hope for this generation.
It was something crazy too. Like 67% of respondents said they wanted less sex or no sex in movies.
I just don't believe that. I think that's like a selection bias. Like the people who care to answer that question are the people who are freaks and think that way. Everyone else is just like, this is fucking stupid.
I mean, the other side of that is the other half of that coin is you get the people in fursuits during the movie responding as well, who are like, where are the sex? We need more representation of
I want full on penetration whilst in a fursuit.
We're definitely going to see at least one or two fursuits at PAX.
Dude, I saw them in the city the other day.
I've been to PAX before, and it's like it's not like Comic-Con levels of cosplayers, but there definitely will be, because I know that there are cosplay events. We've looked at the schedule, so there are events, so there will be some.
Yeah, I've been putting together my my Sailor Girl transformation.
Sailor Moon.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was looking into the production of this movie, and
definitely got some good good shots. There were some good movie cinematic shots. There's also some really quick cuts.
Lots of quick cuts. Yeah. I was noticing, and this is part of one of the bits of reshoots that was done was in the train Depot.
That is my least favorite fight sequence. That train, the sword fight sucks.
Yeah, and so that was one of the reshoots, because they originally, it was just like a one-on-one fight with some guy, and so they, for me, it was just about how it was shot, because it was just like, yeah, cut, you know, it was pretty sloppy.
At some we're of the a little spoiled now, because we've doubles. Had so many good single cut fight scenes that can do that better.
Yeah,
like that, the John Wick in common.
But even the swords just seem like so props. Fake.
Yeah,
they seem
those are plastic. Those are plastic.
Yes,
and you could see where they put in the edit.
What did he say right the before they pulled them out? It's like die with honor or something like that.
Yes,
yeah. As they're in a Mexican standoff, and then they all like how about we die with a little dignity or something? And
yeah, I think that's it.
And they all like look around and nod to each other. That is a cool sequence. It's they cool. all look it's around, they cool. nod, yeah. they all I mean, drop
that, their that's clips. An acknowledgement of we can all die time. This way, or we can all at least have a chance.
Die like men. And then they just kill each other to death.
I like the special effects of when the shitty plastic swords hit each other, and then they put in the little like sparks. Metal hitting metal like sparks. Yeah.
Yeah. So this.
Did you read? Did you see why they did reshoots? Though it's kind of it was disappointing. They did reshoots because they felt the original was too like gory and extreme.
Uh huh.
Weird.
They could have put it on FX. They do. They knew they would have.
I mean, they were definitely pushing that early 2000s R rating just by having the boobs exposed for as long as they were. They definitely had a stopwatch while they were doing the edits there, and they're like, okay, that's our limit.
Well, because I think that they follow, you know, the I don't even was it rated R?
Yes, it is a rated R movie.
Okay. I was going to say, because like I'm pretty sure they only say there's fuck no way once, PG-13 which is you're allowed, which you're allowed to do in PG. Boob. Yeah, you're right. I see somewhere that the actress who played her, where is it?
Who's a Bond girl? Bond girl in the Quantum of Solace.
Yeah, she refused to have a body double based.
Nice.
Love. But yeah, so I was like looking into the production of this, and it was a remarkably kind of drama free for the most part. Like for one thing, like the turnaround was really fast, which to me is indication of it being of a certain era of filmmaking, right? You know, like that we're not getting like the very much like video games, right? You know, we're not getting this blown up 10-year development cycle where things are being constantly rewritten, rescripted,
rewritten.
Like they had very minor bits of that. It was they entered negotiations in 2003. So from initial talks to eventual release, 4 years. That's not that bad.
And I don't know if you saw this, but originally they had envisioned Vin Diesel.
I did. No, he was originally attached.
And that's incredible.
And that was the part that, again, it's like clear that why it's this triple is like, X. This falls into the FX movie genre, because
which could just be described as Vin Diesel's discography.
Yeah, because like it was like, oh yeah, dude, this is just like, you know, a slightly more violent triple X, you know, without the extreme sports.
All of the FX movies are connected. It's the FX cinematic universe.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, there are some where it's like Forgetting Sarah Marshall was also an FX movie.
Yeah, all the same universe, man.
So Vin Diesel eventually stepped down from the role, and
we got Timothy Middle Earth Elephant
was cast instead, who, you know, I'm a big fan of Timothy Oliphant. I'm a Justified fan. I really love Deadwood. He has this like this one little detail is he has this extremely unique walk that is like you can tell when it's not hit when it's, you know, him and not a stunt double or whatever. It's just the way he walks is very unique, And to me, it's like it's very reminiscent of it's like he's playing like a like a Midwestern lawman, like that he's like walking in such a way, and he's always got his hand on this on his service weapon.
Or like he's got the cowboy boots on and the fucking stirrup things.
And I was like, yeah, what's Raylan doing with Raylan's gone full skinhead.
No, I had noticed that too. That it's like a very odd gait in
There's something about that where it's like a it was some sort of like military intelligence training or something where you're trained to keep your arms in a certain like reaching distance of your weapon at all times. So that you're never outside of like a grabbing.
No, they were too busy
on their phone.
So they were too busy being trained by the fucking IDF to do Krav Maga against the insurgents in Brooklyn.
Yeah, and learning how to kettle protesters.
Yeah. I get all of my training from the guy from Detroit.
Yes. The only like kind of there are two actual besides the Vin Diesel, there are two interesting, kind of quirky little trivia details about this movie that I wanted to share with you guys. That to try to like save money in that opening sequence where you're seeing like the backstory of the flashbacks of Agent 47's upbringing as a kid being indoctrinated by the organization, like at least half of that are clips taken from the James Cameron TV series Dark Angel, which was also owned by Fox and must have had similar themes and stuff, because you can tell that the scenes when the kids have hair, that's one indication. That's usually buzzed, but they have hair, that's one indication. And whenever you see the barcode on the neck and not the back of the head, that's from Dark Angel. And so again, James Cameron, God Emperor, bringing us that was Jessica Alba's breakout role, was in that show. Where she plays like this like genetically engineered super soldier. So it's again very similar kind of themes and tone. But I was just like, that's wild to me. Like, yeah, so they're like, yeah, let's save some money. Cause so Fox, who you know is distributing this movie, also owned the rights to this TV show, so they just cut in some scenes from this fucking TV show. Dude,
if you've got a footage vault, use it.
Yeah, why not? Yeah. I guess.
I mean, everyone always praises Disney for their reuse of animation when they were doing their animated movies. That's all I'm saying.
And the other one, you know, so this movie, you know, might be one of the worst rated films we've done for the show. Sits at a 16 on Rotten Tomatoes and a 35 on Metacritic.
Unfair.
Yeah.
No, unfair. The
it shouldn't be very high, but it shouldn't be that.
No,
the rhetoric this movie.
This is firmly a 60.
Oh, and again,
I would go higher.
Another indication of why, again, this is like a certain era of movie, and like why this was like a Bush era thing, has to be with that response, the response to the film. People were like, in today's standards, this does not hold water. They're like, it's too violent, it's too gory, it's too, it's excessive in its violence.
Because this is another iteration of violence in video games.
That's just an evangelical, you know, reaction to this.
No,
but and then their reaction to John Wick.
The fact that this movie made over $100 million on a $20 million budget, and they still decided not to make a sequel because of the response, which is crazy. That would never happen today. If a film made that much more over budget like this, that's immediately
fuck them critics.
They would release a sequel that is triple as bad in the things that people were angry about. They'd be like, oh, you want gore? Oh, we'll give you gore. We actually disemboweled the actor on set.
You'd get the, you know, the version of this movie that's like the fucking Boondock Saints 2, you know, like the Pacific Rim 2. The
absolute
10 time. I mean, again, I would never put Bad and Pacific Rim in any.
No, but Pacific Rim 2 doesn't exist, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. It's just like taking the movie and just absolutely beating it into the ground. But the one
Transformers.
That, so the only,
I argue that Transformers 2 is still funny.
The only, like, one of the only positive receptions to the film was from the absolute lad.
Yes, yes.
Slovenian philosopher and communist theorist Slavoj Žižek, who put this on his personal list of greatest films of 2012. Or the greatest films. No, it was in a 2012 poll. It was just his 10 greatest films. And it's just like, dude, what a king. I tried looking it up and I couldn't really find anything specific. Like, he wasn't, I haven't seen him give like a full analysis of it, but he was just basically like, this list includes just like guilty pleasure stuff that I just enjoy liking, and it ranges the gamut of all these, you know, genre foibles he enjoys. And, you know, he probably has some more in-depth thesis on it, but I just thought that was so funny.
Yeah. I read that too and was like, hell yeah, based. We love him.
We do.
I also I think way more positive on this movie than at least two of you are, because I think this movie is pretty like excellent for what it is. It's shocking to me how bad the reception is with this movie. Like,
when I say it's a 60, I mean that's like what I think its Rotten Tomatoes aggregate should be.
No. Fair enough. But like, just the fact that so many things said it was incoherent, which I just don't think it is.
It's impossible to be incoherent with this loose of a plot.
Right. The one bit that's like, maybe there are a few leaps where it's like, okay, what the fuck's going on? Like, the one that sticks out in my head right now is like the whole bit with the train station. Everything's been locked down. They can't even go, you know, on the trains that are going into Russia. And then somehow they get to fucking Istanbul. They just glance over that. They just completely glance over that. Like, okay, they got out of the country. They're in Istanbul. They drove. But like, all the borders are still supposed to be shut down. It was, they make it such a big part of the plot about how, you know, everything's been shut down. There's only one way for him to go. And then, they're in the crossroads of the east and west.
They knew about the tunnels in Brooklyn before any of us did. They hired some guys that were integral in digging those tunnels, created a tunnel from Russia to Istanbul. There you go.
The only other one that like I could maybe see is like, okay, yeah, could have used a little bit more, and it's pretty central to the plot, is the bit with the Russian president and the body double, about like what the double's motivation is. Like, and it's just basically
And why is he in charge? Like, is he the opposition leader? Did the opposition leader like get his face redone? Like, that is the one thing that I do agree with is glaring, is like, why is he in charge and who is he? And they kill him before he can answer it.
No, I think he was just a random dude.
Truly just a body double.
He just wanted to take the position.
I was also confused, who's the evil one, right? Like, you know, the guy's like, that's another bit of, again, this is like the anti-Russia propaganda stuff, that like, oh, this guy is like a moderate reformer, yet he still does human trafficking and white slavery and shit like that, you know?
I would just like to say that this movie is foreshadowing what we're experiencing right now with Russia, in that we don't know if Putin is a body double, if he has many clones, you know. So it was,
well, we do know he has body doubles. That's like not a question. Putin definitely has doubles. It's whether Putin is a double or not at this point that we don't know.
Yeah, yeah, fair.
We're gonna be in our like late 70s, and he's gonna still look exactly the same. Like,
that guy was supposedly dying of cancer when I was 30.
Is he Rasputin?
Rasputin. I do want to shout out one of my favorite character actors in this movie, Robert Knepper, who plays the head of the FSB, or the FSB guy.
The lead FSB. Yeah. He's
Teabag, like, from Prison Break.
That's right. Okay, that's was like who? It's like, what role am I thinking of from him? And is he like? Does he have put on like a Creole accent as in Prison Break? Is that what it is?
Hell yeah, he does.
Yeah. Okay. So it's like, yes.
He does a decent job. I know him from a bunch of stuff. Accent in this movie, but he definitely has. He has some points where he's definitely slipping.
I love it when he calls it the FSB. The FSB.
FSB.
This is kind of random, but one of these little kind of bits that had me hooting and hollering. It happened maybe three times. I guess it was probably in Istanbul as well. But they would do things like it happened at the very beginning and then at the end, where it would be like when they would show a new location or something, just to get to show how dumb the audiences were back then. You know, they have to do this. But it was literally like, it was London, .. England. It would just be like, St. Petersburg, pause.
See, I've
Russia.
I've always was like, really? Wanted a movie.
I thought it was London, Peru, you know? Like,
I've always wanted a movie to go against that trait. It could have been London, all the Texas. Locations be places that also exist elsewhere and just say the first one. So just be like Athens, like Athens, Greece, Athens, Georgia.
Yeah. So it was just like, oh yeah. From context clues, I could not have put together that, you know, St. Petersburg is in Russia. Thank you.
Or you know, that the was scene a of it panning sentence. Over Big Ben, you know, couldn't tell that it was London, England.
Yeah, it was just, but it was how the text would come up on screen. It was just London, pause, England.
But that is kind of like a spy-ish movie formulation of like that, because they do like the dot dot dot, and it makes the beeps like it's like a
they're putting it in a computer,
typing it in. They should have put coordinates in too. Might as well have put longitude, latitude.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, because that would be. But that's bad OPSEC. That's bad OPSEC. You're giving away your location.
You're
all I'm saying is I enjoyed when movies would do that, and then you would go fact check their longitude latitude, and it would be completely not the right place.
They're just putting random numbers up in there.
Yeah.
Well, one thing about
this fucking Pittsburgh.
It's always fucking Pittsburgh.
This being able to be made when it was, and then like in 2016, the only difference would be the amount of fucking like cell phone and like tracking bullshit that they'd be trying to like push on you, which is true. You know, the government is watching you at all times, and so are all of our corporate overlords.
Not true. I wear a Faraday cage while I go out in public, I'm untrackable.
Your house is under a dome.
I do like a
dome.
I'm definitely gonna be the psycho in like 40 years who builds a Faraday cage into his bunker.
The other thing that I think does also speak to the Bush era is still a positive view of the security state, and that the CIA is the ultimate good guys. They save the day at the end.
Dude,
you know,
the courtesy of the U.S. government. Such a like. Curb Your Enthusiasm music starting.
The one bit that like they, I don't necessarily think it's something that they needed to develop, but like there's the scene where you first meet the CIA guy where he uses what's her name? What's the woman's name? The character's name. Why am I not seeing it here?
Anika,
yeah. So he's like using her as like the go between, and you know, it's basically, so it's like Agent 47 has some dirt or something on this guy, or you know, has something that the other guy wants. So it's like, you know, he's got him kind of by the balls, and hence when he does ultimately foil the Interpol agents from arresting Agent 47, he, you know, texts him, "We're even." And so like it's just like it's less ambiguous what it is exactly their relationship was, what it was that
former lovers,
I mean, yeah, Agent 47 had over this guy.
I just took it as the CIA's employed him and he's kept those records, and
that's why I thought the Curb music would come on, because remember earlier in the movie the FSB guy was like, oh no, it's CIA, and he's like, why would it be the CIA, it's clearly our ghost, and he's like, oh, you're naive, you know. I thought that was a nice little
there payoff. Is also the bits where they say, like, you know, the organization has ties to every world government. So that would obviously include the United States and the CIA. So yeah, you're right about that. But it's just, yeah, where it's like they have to be so heavy-handed in things like giving you the exact location of these things. They then leave that to be like, you know, you gotta kind of put it together. It's a little bit inconsistent in that regard, but yeah. You know, it's fine. It's totally fine. But yeah, I found this to be a pleasant romp, and
very much enjoyed this.
I do not understand there's like maybe one kill that's like kind of intense, where he like smashes a dude's head into like a marble floor and then curb stomps him. That's like one the most gruesome kill, and it's on screen for like 2 seconds.
Be completely honest, at this point in time, I've been so desensitized to brutal kills in movies register.
Yeah, it's probably just like in retrospect, this looks pretty tame. But yeah, I do not understand the backlash, other than, again, thinking about the time it was that this came out and who would be the people that would be reacting to it like that. And it's when evangelicals were at the height of their kind of political and cultural power. So makes sense that they'd have problems with this, as well as also, again, they are deeply tied into the security state. So the implications that, you know, that we're involved with, you know, shady extra governmental organizations doing murders on our behalf of world leaders, you know,
you would say Blackwater?
Yeah. Say would hit a little close to home for them. So like, I think that they, that they, you know, would realize, yeah, we should maybe not be supporting this creative endeavor.
So I think I think those criticisms are absurd. The one criticism that would never have been levied at that point in time that I think I have watching this movie is the character of Nika, because she is just really not done much justice. She's mostly there to show her tits.
Yep.
She says she's not a whore by choice, like telling us that she's been trafficked. And then in the next scene, for no reason, she is topless. Like there is literally no reason for her to be topless, but she is.
It's all she knows.
I mean, it's all she knows.
I mean, I'm a little more charitable in that regard, in that, like, yes, it's somebody who's been trafficked, who the only way they have of, exhibiting any sense of agency to try to claw back some sense of power, as minuscule as it is, you know, through sexuality, you know, and through the use of their body. So
okay, yeah, fair enough.
I buy that. I was a little bit more charitable in that read, but yeah, definitely was like, yeah, she's there for eye candy. She's there for those topless scenes. She is not, I mean, served. Not
just topless. She's legitimately just wearing underwear in a full, like, single cut walk to the back.
Oh, in that one scene, yeah. But then there are other scenes where, yeah, she just takes her top off.
It's like the fun fact. I don't remember the name of the movie. There's a Tarantino movie with Salma Hayek.
Is it
From Dusk Till Dawn?
From Dusk Till Dawn, yeah. With the
tequila scene.
Yeah.
Hell yes. Yeah.
It's like weird of him to put himself in that role.
Dude, Quentin loves that. That's why he's the king.
That movie is pretty formative for me, I'm not gonna lie. Salma Hayek.
Wow. I love the dick gun.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. So good. So like
Andrew, you know, Andrew had a dick gun watching that movie. That's so formative. Might have been one of his first dick guns.
Whoop that shit. This is just like pure FX movie brilliance here. Yeah, that when put on FX would have been heavily edited, that's for sure.
Oh yeah. The other thing that
who can forget the lovely FX cut of Balls of Fury, which cuts out all of the offensive parts, which is like 40% of the movie.
Yeah, most of it.
Like, it's a completely different movie if you watch the FX version.
For a video game adaptation of this time, it does a really good job, I think, of giving you the tie-ins through his fairly creative kills that do replicate what you can do in the game. But it's not like in your face, like shown, like shouted at you.
Yeah, I
thought that's really well done.
I was going to bring that up, that like the tie-ins are subtle enough that like would please fans of the games. Like the real diehards would know that, like, you know, his guns are like the exact, like, you know, replicas. I read somewhere that except for like the rifle that he uses in the very end scene, his two rifles are like the two main ones that he uses throughout the games, his pistols, all that. But then you've got
another homage, just as you were mentioning that, as I was thinking about it, to the early 2000s, is the scene when he's meeting the arms dealer, the brother. And he's just like, all of these are like cheap Chinese knockoffs. Like, that was definitely an intentional language of the time.
No, it still is. You know, it still is. Yeah, like that. China is doing IP infringement. They're doing patent fraud.
Infiltrating us.
But one of the other ones, just like, you know, you see him, he uses Agent 47 uses a disguise, which is a huge part of the gameplay.
Yeah, multiple disguises.
Puts on a wig. That's all he's gotta do.
One of my
all he's gotta do is put on a pair of glasses and all of a sudden he's a nerd.
Yeah. He's invisible.
He puts on a fucking like Groucho Marx or whatever the guy's name is.
The Groucho Marx, the glasses and the nose. Yeah.
Can't see me.
When he takes out the real arms dealer is, I think, one of the like best homages to the game. He poisons him, makes him go to the bathroom, and then discreetly knocks him off with his bodyguards. Like that is such a great
scene. That was such a fun scene.
He's looking at the reflection in the spoon.
Yep.
And she's all mad that she's at her fancy dinner and doesn't get to
doesn't get to finish.
Steals a bottle of wine off the table.
Longer charming.
With real class.
Girls upset they never get to finish.
True.
I mean, Timothy Oliphant gets to decide when she finishes, apparently.
I also like totally like missed the part where she said somewhere that she wanted to, her dream was to own a vineyard. Weird dream. Because that's like the end thing. It's like
it's her father's dream.
Okay.
It was like her father and hers thing.
Because that's the end bit where he's her guardian angel looking over her with a sniper rifle trained on the back of her head. she goes to the post office and opens up, you know, a deed to some vineyard.
She's not happy about this gift. Pop, pop.
We missed the best line in the movie, which is in the very, very beginning, where he's talking to, they're in Nigeria, I think. The Nigerian guy goes, he says that Nigeria is the anus of the world.
I missed that.
Yeah, which one says that? Who says that?
The guy sitting down.
Is it the Interpol guy says that to him? Or
No. The Nigerian guy says it.
The general?
Yeah, the general.
Interpol?
Yeah.
Which is very funny, again, that they choose Interpol as, like, the main antagonist, because, like, Interpol does not do that shit.
Nerds. They're nerds.
They literally are nerds. Like, they're a liaison office who does, like, translations and shit like that.
Yeah.
They do not have jurisdiction. They love throwing that around. Interpol has jurisdiction here. Like, no, Interpol has jurisdiction nowhere. They do not, you know, they do not conduct investigations. That's not their thing.
And the lead Interpol guy is a Welsh actor, and him trying to do the British accent is pretty funny at certain times. He just drops it just a little bit, or he's Scottish, like, actually.
Yeah. I felt like it was constantly just his normal accent.
How many sheep do you think they kept on set for him?
Yeah, no, I don't think he is Welsh, is he?
No, he's Scottish. I misspoke. Yeah, he's Scottish.
So, never mind. Yeah. No. Yeah. Well, the Scots still love some sheep, but it's different.
They're not sheep fuckers in the way that the Welsh are.
Yeah.
Hence the it's different.
Scottish are decent. We'll take them. Better than the Brits. So
absolutely. I'm sure that there were other little ones as well, like Agent 47's handler Diana. I'm sure she must be a figure from the games that I don't recognize, because the fact that, like, for as small a role as it was, like, where, you know, you're just getting the computerized voice and then she calls him up once to tell him that, you know, he's been set up. Your location is compromised. The fact that they name her at all must signify that she is has some role from the games.
Tell us in the comments, listeners. Give us some engagement.
Yeah, real Hitman heads out there.
Yeah,
Malaysia. Yeah, what are your thoughts on the how faithful of an adaptation was this?
I did think it was funny that they chose to change the name to just the organization, as opposed to, it's in the games, it's like the ICJ, something like that.
It's
the ICA.
It's something also very
international
generic.
Contract agency.
Yeah, it's something very generic.
Which is just incredible that they use the same letters as the CIA and just scrambled them a bit.
Intentional. Yeah. That's totally intentional.
Yeah.
So this is done by, the Hitman games are done by IO Interactive, which is a Danish studio, I believe. Yeah, they're in Denmark. Copenhagen. I don't really feel like that they've got a particularly fraught history with the CIA. That we know of. That shit hasn't been declassified yet. Because every 5 years or so.
Is it Denmark that has the tallest people on Earth?
It's one of those countries.
I think it's Denmark. And if it's true, it's because the CIA was doing genetic modification on the Denmark citizens to create super soldiers. You heard it here first.
I mean, that's perfect fodder.
Alex Jones arc.
There's Christian. They're good Christian boys out there. We could turn them Mormon, turn them to evangelicals, just American super soldiers.
You don't want to be messing around with converting people, too many people, to Mormonism. That's its own.
The CIA and the FBI love the Mormons.
Aren't they predominantly staffed by Mormons nowadays?
Yes, correct. Because you know what Mormons do? They follow orders. They don't ask questions.
They marry multiple wives.
Yeah, they do what they're told.
Yep, they respect hierarchical power structures because they all know if they're subservient in this life, they'll become gods of their own planets in the next life.
Yeah. Who wouldn't
the
want
the true American right there?
Yeah, it's actually partially why the Mormon Church fundraises so well, because it's a, like, they force donations pretty heavily.
Catholics tithing, just get to go to heaven.
Yeah, no, you get to be, you get to become lord of your new star empire.
Yeah, just fuck all the bitches like Zeus.
So, like, where do I sign up for this?
If you want to become a Mormon, you all you have to do is find your closest Church of Latter-day Saints. Yeah.
And you will issue, they'll issue you your own pair of sacred underwear.
Yeah.
Yep, you'll have to talk with some missionaries. They're probably going to want to inspect your house. They're weird like that.
Yeah, they will issue you a pair of khakis and a black polo.
I remember so that when
you could go on missions.
I remember when I stopped going and they sent missionaries to our house every weekend.
Yeah, they are relentless.
That's fucking.
They will do chores for you though.
I just remember they came one time and like my dad was drinking a Diet Coke and they were like sinner, like malcontent or whatever, blah blah blah. And he was like, get the fuck off my property.
Caffeine.
They've relaxed on their caffeine issues. Yeah. Just like they relaxed on not letting black people into their church.
At first, I was going to say.
They haven't really relaxed on that.
Yeah,
though.
No.
No, like they say they have at least.
Them being anti-caffeine is actually based. I'm like probably the single anti-caffeine head in the chat right now. Caffeine's a poison.
get addicted.
It's my favorite drug.
No, it's a poison.
It's the scourge. Number one addiction in the world. I just made that statistic up, but you believed it because it sounds true.
Probably is. Sound
true. I mean, it probably is true.
Yeah, it probably is.
Between all the coffee and tea drinkers across globally.
And now the energy drink in Americans.
Ooh, and now buddy. What was it? The Starbucks lemonade drinkers? The
no,
Panera.
Yeah,
Panera.
They just died.
Yeah,
Panera. They just died. I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure Dunkin' has their own energy juice now as well.
But does it have free refills like the Panera one does, which is so it's literally just kill yourself.
Just 1,000 milligrams of
have
caffeine.
Have a caffeine overdose
TikTok
for lunch.
Panera lemonade challenge.
Right, we've gone
now. You're off, really gonna get it, Ben.
We've gone way off script here, but you know, it's easier. These episodes are easier when we don't like the films, right? You know, there's more. I feel like there's more to talk about when we don't.
I mean,
like
it's also movies. The fact that this movie is so short that like we are rapidly approaching the runtime of the movie.
Yeah, and I get tired of. I don't like actually just doing the full plot of the going over and dissecting the full plot.
There is no like full plot to discuss. We already said it. He gets set up. The CIA covers for him. Because they probably ordered him to do it in the first place.
Yeah, it's really that's the whole thing is really a regime change plot. That's why we don't know who's in control. It's just the CIA.
There's well, ample here's amount, a, probably here's about a funny 2 bet. Minutes of boobs shown.
Yeah, here's a funny bet. When the Interpol guys are spying on the FSB head who is in conversations with the body double, they keep referring to each other as comrade, which is very funny. You know, trying to sneak in some anti-communism in here when at this stage the Russia is very much not communist, like not even close. And
this is a communist overthrow. This is what's happening.
It's a communist plot, but like just the showing that, you know, the pure lack of what's the word I'm thinking of?
Nuance?
The lack of intellectual curiosity that pervades Hollywood, right? They're just like, oh, Russia. Everyone goes, yes, comrade. You know? So
they're all bears and hats.
Yeah.
With unicycles.
All the women are prostitutes.
Yes.
Ballerina prostitutes.
Ballerina prostitute assassin.
And the other thing is the one scene where he lets Nika out of the trunk in front of all of the rural Russians who just laugh.
They just laugh. Women. Am I right?
Oh, his wife probably talked back to him, so he put her in the trunk. He's normal.
Yeah.
If I had car, I would do same.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Ah, he let her off easy.
Is it, I put wife in back of ox cart all time.
Wife has to scoop up ox poop.
Yeah, so again, this is very much a movie of its time, but because of that, I find it more enjoyable. A lot of, like, you know, films like basically post MCU, right? You know, are just like, it's either, you know,
yeah, and this is art house shit
that, like, it's a toss up whether it's either good or just pretentious drivel, or it's just straight up slop. And you know, this is like at least entertaining slop. Yeah, you got the rare pearls. You got the rare pearls out there. All right, should we just go right into reviews and
adaptation and movie ratings?
Yeah, go right into our scores. Let me write this out here. So we'll do just like straight up movie ratings first. Who wants to throw it out there?
This is a 77 for me.
Okay.
So doing a 7.7?
Right. Interesting.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. That's fine.
7.7 out of 10. And I say that because it's definitely, like, as far as a movie goes, it falls into a C category for me. It's definitely on the upper end. It's enjoyable. It's definitely the type of movie you can put on as background noise and, like, turn up and, like, oh, you just shot the Russian president. That's, you know, really cool.
This is a movie, again, where it's like you could just drop into it at any time,
yeah,
know what's going on, and enjoy the time that you spend with it, right?
Yeah,
definitely.
So I'm another addition to the FX category, and, like, you know, what
the,
makes
the
an
ta-
FX
the
movie.
Taxonomy that we're creating. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Another one is it's a good morning when you're hungover movie. Mm. So a little hungover today. Watched it this morning before we recorded.
That feels like
pop in and out,
but I'll allow it.
It doesn't
feel like what?
Saying it feels like correlation because you were hungover and watched it this morning and had a good time. So you're like, it's a perfect hangover movie. We need more evidence of that before we can.
No,
firmly establish this.
I understand what he's saying, because it's similar again to the just popping in. It's that, like,
exactly,
you are literally glued to your couch, can't fucking move. You know, just like, don't, like, if you move, you might throw up. So you've, like, in the remote is just out of reach. So it's been on this channel for the past like 3 hours, and this comes on, I'm gonna leave it on. I'm not gonna move, and, you know, I'll be okay by the time it's over.
It's like the 2 hours with commercials, you know, you're just chilling there. Then after the 2 hours of trying to become a human, you become a human at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, everything's okay.
Right, that, so to me, what that's...
Go ahead, Andrew.
Let's hear your score,
no,
Mike.
Go. We'll go first. I want to hear your...
So for me, what that speaks to, and I think what the FX taxonomy lends itself to, is it's enjoyable without asking really literally anything of you as the viewer. Like, that's why it's a good hangover movie. Like, to me, that's what kind of makes the movie an FX movie, that
non-deep thought movie.
Yeah, it just doesn't require much of you one way or the other.
Subconscious frontal cortex thought only.
Yeah. And for me, you know, this one, I'm going to give it a 7.9. I don't feel like it can get to the 8 range, but it's just below that for me.
All right. I'm going to give it an 8 just because I want the whole number today. You know, that round 8. All those curves. Just
also
like curves.
You need to
Nikas, whatever.
Yeah,
say, whoa there.
Whoa there, please. It's because I had a client named that, and it was in my head.
I'll at least know it's towards the end, so I'll just look for a spot that glows like a radioactive fucking.
I was also going to go 7. Right, I I feel similarly that like it doesn't quite hit the bar of like an 8 or higher, which like my movie and game rating scale have kind of like gotten all fucked up, right? That I feel
all
like
fluid, it doesn't matter.
It's like I feel like with games and stuff that like the, you know, 7 is should be like an average, right? You know, 5 does not really denote an average for
movies,
a game anymore.
5 should be more close to average.
Yes, where you still have the length of the 10 point range for films, whereas games, you know, anything lower than basically anything lower than like a 6 or lower should probably pass on, you know, don't waste your fucking time. Granted, again, we're not getting into like the whole games rating and journalism discussion and like who is telling you that
it's an IGN
6 or yeah, no.
But it's also like the time invested. So like to
right,
your point,
it's different.
It's a 6
it's different.
Or below. Yeah,
it's,
you could waste 2 hours
with a movie,
on a shitty movie.
The absolute maximum you're spending with a movie is like 3 to 4 hours.
And yeah. That's like, that's, you know, really on the far end.
Yeah, and you're exactly. Only spending, you know, maximum.
$3 maybe.
Well, it could be like maximum. Well, say you spend $20 on a fucking Blu-ray or something like that, or 30 if you
or
buy
a movie ticket or a movie ticket like in the city.
Yeah, you know, but then at least like you're getting the experience.
Yeah,
you know.
Going
to the movies post COVID, where everyone's on their phone and talking throughout.
Yeah, I think the time commitment is a big reason behind that. But yeah, I don't think it fully reaches the height of an 8 for me, but it's really close. It's like right on that borderline. But I think like this is an enjoyable hour and 30 minutes to spend. Like, again, I've been dog sitting this week. I have to like stay at like my neighbor's house at nights, and, you know, not the most comfortable or best setup in the world, but made the later part of the evening enjoyable. Right. You know, I just threw that on my laptop and had some microwavable popcorn, and, you know, it was enjoyable. I did not feel myself, you know, reaching for my phone, even though it's a movie I've seen before, right? You know, I have another thing for like FX movie things. It's got infinite replayability, rewatchability. Mm-hmm. You know, you can.
You never really see it fully through.
Right, right. That's the big thing. It's like that. You usually it's like you're catching it at different times. So it's like I've watched the first half this number of times. I've watched the middle this number of times, and.
Yeah.
I probably only now watched the full movie maybe twice, but like, yeah, there's a replayability factor that runs high in an FX movie. So in my mind, can't go lower than like a 7.5. That's kind of like the floor for FX movies.
I didn't think that as far as a movie goes, it could fall below that like pure C rating. But it feels like it belongs in that C+.
Yeah. All right. In terms of adaptation, a little bit tougher for us because, again, we are not really as versed in the games. You know, Andrew and I have played a little bit, and we can see little touches here and there. We'll go in the snake order. I was the last for the movie. I'll be the first for the adaptation. I think this is a pretty good movie adaptation because it takes something that doesn't really have a strong plot in the game and doesn't try to do too much with it, you know, but gives it just enough narrative juice and character relatability to make a movie, right? You know, you need those things in a movie.
I would argue the success of the movie is almost the fact that you can barely tell it's based on a video game.
Exactly.
But it's not a shame.
Tell me this was based on a video game. This is just an original fucking movie to me.
But it's not ashamed of its video game roots.
No, but like it's not crying and screaming that I'm a video game movie. And
it's not like specifically targeting a video game audience as a video game movie and then trying to broaden it to a larger audience.
No, it's just a spy movie based on a video game IP that's also a spy game. Yeah. Assassin.
So I am gonna bump it up. I'm gonna give it the full 8 rating for an adaptation.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think this is an 8 as an adaptation. It's this is how you want games to be adapted, in my opinion. Like this is the way to do it.
I wouldn't say all games though, but definitely, you know, definitely a spy game like this, because like anything else than what they did would really just kind of be ham-fisted.
Yeah, man. The yeah. movie adaptation of GoldenEye really just didn't cut it for me. It didn't feel felt too freelance. I agree with the 8. I would give it an 8. I don't think I would go any higher than an 8.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a really easy average too. Don't even type that in a calculator. I dare you.
Say, so did Mike, did you give it an 8?
I said 8. Yeah, I said 8.
Okay.
Just so, type boobs out in the calculator instead.
Yeah, we give it an 8.0085
yeah.
out of 10. Yeah.
So it comes though to a 7.875. So you could round it up to basically a 7.9 for
yeah, but if you leave it at 7.875, that is a beautiful 7 7/8.
Yeah, it's an eighth fraction. I even knew that. But yeah, then the solid, you know, straight 8 across the board for adaptation.
That feels fair. I feel uncontentious and happy about those ratings.
Yeah, we have no contrarian
coming from a Redditor. From a Redditor, that's big. Matt, I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't partake in Reddit culture in that same way. You can check my Reddit account. I have. The last time I commented was 5 years ago.
I'm not saying that you're as bad as some of the Redditors, but you are still reforming.
They say your brain has still been formed via Reddit, right? Whether or not you engage on Reddit, you are still a Redditor.
Yes, but if you engage, you become much more
saying you're there.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
I'm trying to defend my honor there and be like, I am not that level of...
You know what?
This is about to become a contentious pod.
Yeah, exactly. And then I rolled back out of my 10 compliments. You did an ungrowth.
Yeah.
It's a 0 out of 10 movie. I fucking hated it, and I'm done with this. No more video game movies. We're only going to be doing Martin Scorsese's Killers of the Flower Moon. That's the only movie we're talking about now.
I need to go. I actually want to see that. I haven't seen that. But dude,
well worth it. It's good. It's very, very, very good.
But talking about movies though, yo, like I can't wait
for the movie we're gonna watch. So in New York, I feel like I can't say like legally on a podcast.
I'm still so dune pilled.
Boston, not New York.
What you mentioned something. What movie is it? You mentioned that a while ago. I forget. Say it. You can
the American out Society. Of Society.
Oh yeah, of magical. Yeah. Are we actually doing that, or is that a joke?
I'm totally down to do that.
I'm down to do it.
We have nothing else to do at night.
And on a that's bare not minimum, entirely my true. Birthday that's falls not entirely true. They will demand a birthday.
That's not entirely that true. There are events in the evening, and there's at least one I think we may want to go to. There's like one giant bomb thing that we may. It's mostly entertainment. Yeah. It's mostly entertainment. Yeah. But one of them is I think is one we may want to go to. But
we're going to the cosplay Olympics to watch me powerlift in a Sailor Moon outfit.
Yeah, there is surprisingly this is turning into a little bit of a PAX preview, folks. There's no D&D things like they do, you know, PAX does
tabletop.
There's D&D stuff at
there's
the
no
convention.
Like sessions being
no, it's there's no there's sessions that will be run for people, but like not a an actual play thing. So you know, PAX
no critical is, role running
PAX is done
PAX.
Is done by you know, is Penny Arcade, the webcomic people. You know, PAX originally stands for Penny Arcade Expo. They created PAX, but so this the Penny Arcade people did, you know, with partnership with Wizards of the Coast, they did the Acquisitions Incorporated long-standing series of actual play stuff, and they've got like spin-offs, so they're like secondary like B-tier casts, and they pretty much used to Every PAX across from, you know, PAX West, East, Unplugged, all that, they would have like an Acquisitions Incorporated event. When I went pre-COVID, I went to, it was like a B squad one. I went to one.
JV.
Yeah, and it was pretty good, pretty funny. You know, they say it's mainly meant to be a comedy one. But yeah, I was surprised to see they didn't have any of those. It's a little weird. And I think you were joking about it, but I think Critical Role has done some appearances.
Oh, no, I've absolutely listened to episodes that they've done at live shows.
Well, they do that a lot, but I'm pretty sure they've done one at PAX before. But yeah, no, didn't see any on the schedule. A bit odd. Yeah, so you guys want to go see that movie. I want to go to there's a soup dumpling place that my sister recommends where we're staying, where our hotel is, that in that town, in that suburb of Boston. There's a place that they go that I will insist upon going to sample.
That's fine. We also have to get pizza in the North End and visit all the Italians.
Go on a pilgrimage for Mike.
Yeah, we also need to go to the Boston Garden so I can spit in front of it and flip off the Larry Bird statue.
Yeah, so
might be able to bring you to a car dealership that the Celtics buy cars from. So
let's take a quick look at the schedule upcoming. So we are off next week while we will be at PAX. You know, it worked out our schedule wise that, you know, we're off next week anyways.
But check out our Instagram, because maybe I'll decide to do some live posts from PAX. Not particularly of us, but just of what's going on.
Yeah.
Of
so
me and my Sailor Moon cosplay powerlifting at the correct. Olympics.
Yeah. What would be our normal
up
like
your skirt?
What would be like our normal news episode for the end of the month on the 30th? We're probably gonna do either just a full PAX recap for everything we saw and everything that went down, or, you know, we'll do a mix of that in news or something. So be on the lookout for
PS5 Pro speculation.
Yeah. But till then, you can support us by following us on twitch.tv/campaigncomrades. Follow us on Twitter at CampComPod.
We almost pulled off recording as long as the movie.
Yeah, we're just a bit shy. Just a bit shy.
We're like we're like 10 to 15 minutes shy.
Because it's only it's like an hour and 25, like if you don't count credits.
Yeah, if you don't count the credits, that's what.
Which I never count credits for runtime.
But in the MCU, the credits are part of the movie, man. You got to stay through the whole credits.
I hate how the MCU has destroyed my brain in that, like. Mm-hmm. Even in a movie like this, where I knew it was beforehand, I knew there was no way that they had a post-credit stinger. I'm still scrolling through the end of the credits on my computer to see is there a post-credit scene. Man, I hate it. I hate it. I don't like it. But for you, our dear listeners, we like you very much. We thank you for listening, for enjoying this kind of just all over the place rant about 2007's Hitman, a thoroughly enjoyable video game adaptation. We shall return with our PAX coverage, and then starting off April, we mixed around some things, and it'll be a little bit early, but we're going to be doing taking a look at Hellblade in anticipation for Hellblade 2, the sequel, launching in May, which a bunch of speculation going on now. Is there going to be a PS5 port? Is there? Are they going to do it? Are they lying to you? Who knows?
If I had to take a wild guess, just as we're ending the episode, I bet you they had one when they were before they were bought, and instead of hitting delete like they were told to, they just saved it and put it off to the side.
Yeah,
someone had it on an external hard drive.
I think it's
sitting on a desktop.
No, it's totally one that they'll think about. You know, that like they'll see how it performs. They'll let it go on Game Pass for a bit and see how sales are, and then they'll be like, yeah, you know, holiday rolls around. They'll be adding to they've basically said, you know, the four games that they announced are just them testing the waters. So.
Yeah, and Hellblade would be another game along those lines. Yeah. That's another short.
Yeah, yeah.
A short game that you want as many people to buy as possible.
Yeah, and it's not going to be one that's like driving console sales. So
yeah, it's not a game they're going to be adding a battle pass to, like Minecraft.
Right. All right. But till then, we will see you in a couple weeks. Yeah, and yeah, because we won't be streaming either. Maybe Tuesday, but we won't be streaming because we'll be at PAX. So, unless we stream from the hotel, from hotel Wi-Fi, we'll see. All right. Yeah, we'll see. All right, folks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.